Hey everybody, welcome to the PDX Beat Podcast, a culture show that keeps a finger on the pulse of all things Portland. I'm your host, Amado Lumba, and for this episode, I chatted with Zeph Shepherd, owner and head butcher at Proletariat Butchery, about his journey into the world of craft butchery, his role in imparting knowledge to the general public, and how he feels his work has vegan sensibilities. So, sit back, relax, and on to the interview.
Are you a Portland native?
I am not. I grew up in Boston. My dad grew up on Bainbridge Island off the coast of Seattle. So I have a ton of Pacific Northwest roots. I have a ton of family in Seattle. My grandmother actually grew up in Portland.
Okay.
But I am not a Portland native at all. I grew up in Boston until I was 18, went to school in Seattle, and then moved here afterwards. So I've been here 9 years now, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
You a Red Sox fan then?
Nominally speaking, I mean, I have to be because I'm from Boston. I also grew up 15 minutes from the Pats Stadium, but I don't really watch typical American sports. I'm really into Formula One, and I'm really into European soccer.
Okay.
Those are my two games. I love the Timbers, like, because they're here now.
Of course, yeah, they're here. They had their amazing year last year.
yeah, but the Red Sox, also, I mean, I am because my brother-in-law is, and I call him and I keep up with it, but I don't really care if they do well or not, honestly. Right. Don't let my brother listen to this. My brother-in-law listens to this.
So you moved to Portland about 9 years ago.
Yep.
And what made you move to Portland?
A sales internship. So I was bartending, climbing mountains, sailing a lot in Seattle out of college, and I was just like, I need to buckle down and start moving forward with my life and kind of do something more career-oriented. So I got a job selling sustainable building material here, and then that was good for about 2-3 years, and then it tanked with the housing economy in 08. And then I was unemployed for about a year, and I started roasting a pig maybe 2007, I think. Yeah, 2007.
Is it done?
It's done. It took a long-ass time, though, I'll tell you that much, man. I had through this big party to have people really kind of be involved in, like, nature more and realize that we didn't have to waste a lot of stuff in order to throw a good party. So I had everybody bring their own cutlery, their own pint glass, and I provided a pig and a keg. And so my trash for, like, 40 people was, like, maybe one bag. It was just, like, napkins.
Nice.
I didn't want paper plates. I didn't want paper cups. I didn't want plastic cutlery. Anyways, that was kind of my goal, to like help my friends and my community get more involved in like participating in nature and seeing waste and so forth. And then when I lost my job, the whole idea of self-provisionment, like I was making my own jam and canning a little bit, and just curiosity and exploration. And then I got a butchering apprenticeship, and it was right up my alley. And I totally, 2010, summer of 2010, and it was, I would say, probably the most transformative experience I've had to date, because I own a full carcass butcher shop now, so
sure.
It changed things a fair bit. That was pretty profound for me.
How did you come upon the apprenticeship?
My best friend from college, she lived in Seattle. Her and her husband bought meat at a farmer's market from this farm. And he's French, and the farm is very French-oriented in a lot of agrarian practice. It's a meat and dairy farm. And she called me up and she's like, Zeph, this farm's doing like a ton of stuff. Like, you're roasting a pig and like making your own sausages and want to get into butchery. Then, like, you need to go talk to these people. And I was like, yeah, I do. So I went up to Seattle and she introduced me to them. And then I sold myself into being an apprentice for a summer.
So you wanted to get into butchery?
Yeah, at that point, yeah, I wasn't getting a sales job, and I wanted to learn something new. I was getting antsy. I needed to, like, have my hands in something and learn and grow, and it was very much a natural inclination for me. So I went up as a trial run and slaughtered a pig with them on the farm, which had a lot of philosophical life trajectory in that experience, and I was okay with killing an animal because I had never done it before. And just the nuts and bolts of like gutting it and stuff was difficult for sure, but I was okay with it because I saw the ultimate worth and value in it, and it was very impactful understanding that like this is where our meat comes from, this is how you work the land, this is how you participate within that closed loop cycle of nature. And so that helped me get in the butchering apprenticeship. They're like, oh, you know what you're doing. You're okay with this. That's a rarity. We'll take you.
But nobody just goes into butchery.
No, not typically.
You wanted to do something with your hands. You wanted to keep yourself busy and learn something. Yeah. Other avenues. But why butchery?
I think it's really a manifestation of a lot of philosophical and environmental convictions. It wouldn't have necessarily had to be butchering, but that's what was in front of me, and it really intrigued me, and it was a huge challenge to figure out, and I love that. I would have stayed selling sustainable building material because that was a really awesome job, and I got to impact the earth and our economy in a really good way. But that ended, so I wanted another avenue that would really help me implement a lot of my internal philosophical environmental convictions. And this, as I learned about it, I was like, wow, this is pretty amazing, and I can do that.
On your website, there's a term above the proletariat name that says craft butchery.
Correct.
Craft is a term that people throw around here in Portland a lot. It's very Portland.
What
came into using that to describe your butchery?
I think that was somewhat of a reaction to what people typically see as butchering as being predominantly a commercial industrial process and not understanding that it can be done with four knives and a 25-inch hacksaw. And so the craft for me, understanding the culture I was in and so forth, connoted the idea that this is a bit distinct. I'm not just zipping out rib chops through a bandsaw. I cut everything with my 5-inch flexible boning knife, my cleaver, my carving knife, and a hacksaw. So there's a craft involved with it. I have to be very attentive to the animal's anatomy. And a typical kind of commercial industrial setting of butchering, you don't, because you have a bandsaw, so it just zips through everything. And so it takes a skill set. It takes a craft. I wouldn't say it's an art form. I think that's a bit too highfalutin. But it's very much a craft, like being a blacksmith or a metal worker or a cobbler or whatever, or a woodworker or a carpenter or something like that. Yeah.
Why not artisanal?
That sounded too bourgeois to me. I use that term here and there, but I don't want people to have the presupposition that things are expensive, and I feel like that word definitely connotes that, and that doesn't really fit within my ethos of what I'm trying to do with my shop. So I want meat to be really financially viable for people to consume in an ethical, responsible manner. And so artisanal, unfortunately, now really means that things are typically going to be really expensive, and I don't want people to think that. So I choose not to use that word too often.
As always, I'm fascinated with how entrepreneurs come up with their business's name. So I asked Zeph, what's in a name?
The name it's a French social class reference. So you have the proletariat and the bourgeois, the bourgeoisie. The bourgeois, the bourgeoisie were the landowners, the company owners, the upper class, and then the proletariat were the working class, the peasants, the people that were somewhat looked down upon in society. And so I feel we're all humans that have equal intrinsic value, and so I want to cut meat that's very, very, very good, but sell it at a price that every human, every person can afford, because every human, I think, is intrinsically valuable, and I want that to be reflected in how I'm structuring my shop. Yeah.
Is it also a little bit of a nod to the common people?
Oh, without a doubt. Overtly, yes. Yeah. Without a doubt. I come from a very frugal background, so I have some empathy and experience around that. And so I wanted to make sure that other people in my demographic don't feel left out. They feel like, okay, yeah, whether you make $1 million or $10,000 a year, I want that person, whoever they are, to feel the ability to come and sit with me and know that my meat is affordable for them, and that they're going to be getting good pastured local meat that's adroitly cut by me.
Describe for me real quick the sustainability factor for proletariat.
The sustainable factor for me is really a handshake with a farmer and getting to know them and trust them. So I buy predominantly from single-family farmers, a couple local slaughterhouses, and I keep all the meat production raising within a local radius, whether it's like Brownsville, Oregon, Cottage Grove, Canby, Hood River area, Ridgefield, Washington. I want to buy local pastured meat and put as much money into the farmer's pocket and as much money into my pocket, as well as saving people money. And then also on like an environmental earth standpoint, going and meeting those people and understanding their convictions and that we have similar values and seeing how they raise their animals. So like doing intensive pasture management. And for raising pigs, using waste from society. You know, we waste a ton of good, nutritious food. Pigs have this unique ability to transform that into something absolutely beautiful. So I really like that kind of redemptive, restorative process of taking waste from the earth and turning it into something good. And so, yeah, just intensive pasture management, really, and seeing that the farmers care about their land and their animals. I'm not really too concerned about large accreditations with it being quote-unquote certified organic or whatever. I rely on going, seeing the person, talking to them, getting to know them, and trusting them. That's what I value most.
And you've got a good
A decent base of people. Yeah, I mean, if the farmers listen to this, get a hold of me. I'd love to talk to you. Yeah, I have about like 6 or 8 different beef farmers, 6 or 8 different pork farmers, 2 or 3 lamb people I work with regularly, and then chickens, a couple people. Yeah, so
I drove by earlier and I thought I saw Carlton Farms truck here earlier. They're one of your suppliers?
I buy some stuff from them. They actually deliver some meat for me. So like sometimes when I get like pig slaughtered for them, they deliver it for me. So I buy some shoulders from them for making sausage like these guys right here. That's about it though. And then call fat and my pork casings. So like these little, yeah, sausage casings right here, pig intestine. So I buy like pig intestine, call fat. Call fat is C-A-U-L. It's the outside membrane around the pig stomach. I buy some pig heads from them for making guanciale. So I get some random bits and pieces from them. And that's where you need to rely on like a slaughterhouse to provide you things like hog casings, because you can't get that from a farmer. So yeah. They're great. I really appreciate them giving me hog casings. And I couldn't. Call fat is hard to come by unless you order it online, so it's really nice to buy it and have it delivered to you.
And it's local, and it's...
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Awesome.
Like our page on Facebook at www.facebook.com/thepdxbeat. Follow us on Twitter at thepdxbeat. Email us at thepdxbeat@gmail.com. And check out our website at www.thepdxbeat.com.
Tell me about the classes that you hold here.
Yeah, the classes are really rad. My shop is very unorthodox in its retail approach, so people sometimes don't really fully understand what's going on, so the classes are a good way for me to get to know people. And for me to explain exactly what's going on in my shop. I don't have a deli case here. I don't pre-cut meat. And so people aren't familiar with that type of retail structure. And so taking class, there's a few things going into that. You get to have your hands on things. So you get to quite literally salt your own bacon, make your own sausage from grinding the meat to stuffing in a casing to taking home to making links. But then also it gives them a chance to understand what I'm doing with a butcher shop, and that's where I get a lot of clients from. I just had a class a week ago or so doing a bacon making class, and then a couple bought a quarter of a lamb. And they're like, yeah, I want a quarter of a lamb. I was like, great. And I got them a quarter of a lamb a week later. And so that's where I build rapport, and they get to understand what I'm doing. And that's my main way of helping people understand the butcher shop. And it really gives people... I want to give people an opportunity to be more producers instead of consumers. So I want people to feel like they can make sausage when they go on vacation, not to buy crappy Johnsonville sausage from Safeway. You know, if you got to Mount Hood, just bring some pork with you and some salt and a couple seasonings, and you just make your own sausage in 5 minutes. Like, you don't have to rely on that commercial system to feed you. You can take back a certain amount of your humanity and have your hands in something and be a producer more so, which I really like. Enabling people to be able to do that.
So DIY.
Yeah, DIY, straight up.
All right.
Yep.
What do you think is the biggest surprise your students walk away with after a class?
I would say, well, they really love the idea that you can come here and we have a couple beers and talk meat. They're like, whoa, you can do that? I'm like, yeah, you can do it at my shop. You get to have a couple drinks and, you know, bring your own booze and we hang out. And
here, and have a sharp knife.
Yeah, and here's a sharp knife. Yeah. I got all my appendages. I haven't had to have anybody leave without, you know, a finger attached, so we're doing good so far. I think the simplicity of things, and also, contrastly, the complexity. When you're cutting apart, when I do, like, a lamb butchery class or pork butchery class, I really talk about the anatomical structure because that's what I have to work within those confines when I am butchering something. So where the hip is on a pig or where the hip is on a lamb, and do I split a lamb between the fourth and fifth rib or the fifth and sixth rib, and here's where the shoulder blade is, and so I want to go here with my knife, so I miss this little cartilaginous flap, and people are like, whoa. I mean, they had no idea what goes into making a rib chop or a shoulder roast or whatever. And then they get a larger understanding of this was a living, breathing animal, and we should treat it with a bit more reverence, so we don't just waste an ambiguous blob of protein. We see that it was once a living, breathing animal. Yeah, I think they go away with a profound kind of jaw-dropping understanding of, like, whoa, that was a lamb. I just saw the whole carcass on the table. I wasn't eating rib chops. I was, like, the whole-on lamb just right there. That, and I think they go away with an understanding, like, not to waste as much, and understanding that every cut of meat is equally valuable. It depends on how you cook it, whether you're eating a lamb rib chop or a lamb shoulder. In a commercial setting, those are valued differently. But one thing we talk about in class, which is really eye-opening for people a lot of times, is that there's equal value between that lamb shoulder and a French rack of lamb. But that isn't what has been communicated to us in the commercial system, so that's, I take it upon myself to help communicate that to people.
So kind of empowering them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yep, totally.
So to make better decisions when they do purchase meat.
Yeah, and understand that the way I sell meat is a quarter of a lamb, so you can't get an infinite amount of racks of lamb. You get one, and then you get a shoulder, and you have to see and start to understand that that shoulder can be just as good. And equipping them and talking about the anatomical structure so they feel supported and encouraged in order to move forward with that, and realize that they don't have to just cook a French rack of lamb. They can cook anything else, really, with a couple basic culinary understandings.
And then, to my understanding, then they go home with
meat. They go home with a good grip of meat. Yep, come to class, have a few drinks, and then you go home with what you'd, you know, a big bag of groceries, essentially meat, that'll last you a while.
Have you had any backlash at all from Portland's vegan community, or is that pretty much par for the course for a
brand? No, not really, actually. I'm still somewhat underground. I'd say this podcast, and I just did OMSI Bourbon and Bacon Night. I've just started to put myself on the radar. So,
And you don't have any sign-up?
I don't even have my sign-up. It's right back there, and right. I have yet to hang it, hopefully within the month. I do all my own work, so I have to weld an awning for the front of my shop and then weld brackets to hang it. So very much doing it all on my own.
Do you have any fear about it? Any
no,
kind of
not really. I would say, quite honestly, my principles and my ethos are very much vegan. My methodology is very different. I would argue that you have your vert rationale and your zvec rationale. Your vert rationale is like what you ultimately want to do, your principles, your desires, and so forth, where your head's at, and then how do you implement those. When I talk to vegans or I read something vegan, I mean, they're speaking my language. I'm like, yeah, I want to foster the earth. I want to save the earth. I don't want to degrade the earth. I want to be humane to animals, you know, treat them with reverence and respect and all these things. And I'm like, yep. And little bit, we vary on significantly, but, you know, to be serious but also be very pejorative, I'm a vegan, you know, just different methodologies.
Right, it's more
so I haven't had any vegan come and throw a brick through my window. Maybe after this podcast that might happen, who knows.
And once you put up your sign, by the way, we cut meat.
Yeah, well, my sign that's going to be on the door when I'm open, that says, it's going to say cutting dead animals, and then you flip it around and it'll say cutting dead animals, in parentheses, open, flip it around, not cutting dead animals, parentheses, closed. Yeah. So that might provoke a few people, maybe.
Hey, that's what makes America great.
Yep, that's the truth.
How do people get your products?
You can call me, email me, text me. My number on my website is also my cell. It's my direct communication. And usually I set up a consultation, much like you're sitting here at the shop. I set up a time to have a meeting with someone, come by the shop, and just like I get to know the farmers and the slaughterhouse, I want to get to know my clients, and so we sit down and we talk. And whether you're single, whether you're married, whether you have a family of 18, that really helps me understand who you are. And then we talk about what your meat consumption has been in the past, where you want it to be, and how I can fit into that, how I can best assist you to move forward. So, you know, I get retired chefs that know how to cook like crazy and geek out, and then I get like English people like, oh, you can do skin on rib chops or like skin on roast. Like, I can't find that anywhere in the U.S. And I'm like, yeah, I can do that because I cut whole animals and I cut it everything to your order, so nothing's pre-trimmed. I'm here at the shop always and never, and so I'm here from 5 to 11 in the evening. I'm here from 6 to 10 in the morning. I'm here midday right now. It's just all over the map. But, you know, if you happen to see my shop on, come and pop your head in. But, yeah, shoot me a text, an email, call me, and love to set up an appointment to have you come by and talk and just kind of see where you're at and see how I can help you move forward.
And that sign will definitely help. The door sign will.
Yeah, the door sign will definitely help, yeah.
What do you think is the future for proletariat butchery?
I have some pretty heavy ambitions. I want to get the shop up and running consistently, where I'm doing, say, half a cow a week, a couple pigs a week, a couple lamb a week. I want to have my classes be a regular thing. Right now it's like 2 or 3 a month maybe, but I would really like to be able to have more consistent classes. I also do a lot of animal roasting. So I've started to do some work with vineyards where I roast whole pigs, whole lamb, whole chickens, the back leg of a cow, which is the dopest thing ever. It's called a steamship roast. And then I also have a couple other arms of the business where I got this. You guys can't see this because it's a podcast, but I got a tree trunk butcher block here. So I've bought a few tree trunks and I'm aging them and I'm going to make tree trunk butcher block. So the idea is you have a vertical grain butcher block for doing cleaver work or just home meat cutting, and it's just kind of a cool island.
What makes that better?
So the vertical grain. So pretty much every butcher block, for all you woodworkers out there, I'm probably going to use the wrong verbiage, but it's like a horizontal grain. But with the old school butcher blocks that are really cool right now, everybody wants those old ones from like 1900, all the grain in the wood is vertical. So when you chop with your knife, it's a better way to work with the wood. The horizontal grain, when you chop with your knife, it can splinter. The vertical grain doesn't splinter. You chop, 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 and you scrape it, and you have a nice, clean, flush surface.
Okay.
It's also better for not holding bacteria and so forth. And it's super durable. I mean, that thing will last forever. I also welded and fabricated my own pig roasting box that I want to start selling and renting, and then getting the word on that. For Zeph Shepherd, through Proletariat, I'm really interested in maybe having a hand in legislation. I just did a discussion panel a few months ago for Friends of Family Farmers, which is an awesome organization, and they do a lot of local legislation around local farming practices and supporting the local farmer and agriculture. And I really love them. I've got a couple of the farmers that I work with now from them. They've told me about them. But doing some legislation work, one of the things immediately to my industry is slaughtering practices. It's really restrictive from a local farmer to bring their meat to market and for me to get it, because they have to go through the USDA and all these regulations like on-farm slaughtering or some kind of local co-op slaughtering facility where it'd be, you know, 20 miles from your business instead of 2 hours away, would be a lot more beneficial economically for farmers. So in my industry for Zeph Shepherd, I would like to be involved in legislation. And I sold my sailboat to start my shop. So I really want to buy a sailboat again. So come buy meat for me so I can save up and buy a sailboat. Yeah, that's me. Yeah.
So a sailboat that will force the bridges in Portland to be up during rush hour.
Yes, basically. Exactly.
Fantastic.
Totally. Yes. Yeah.
Well, Zeph Shepherd, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Yeah, totally, man. My pleasure. Yeah, glad you came by.
Find out more information about Proletariat Butchery on their website at www.proletariatbutchery.com, including details on upcoming classes such as the one on January 28th about making your own bacon. Bacon! You know you want to go. Zeph can also be found on Twitter and Instagram under Proletariat Meat. Also, check out show notes for this episode for a photo of the custom butcher block Zeph referenced. I know I want one. And that's our show, folks. Music used in this episode, courtesy of local musician Sweet Nothing. As always, don't forget to subscribe to the PDX Beat on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, or wherever you download quality podcasts. The next episode will be coming out on February 4th, and will feature my chat with fellow podcaster Sean Barron from the Portland Cool Podcast, so stay tuned for that. This has been a presentation of the PDX Beat. I'm Amado Lumba. Thanks for tuning in.